did for other things.
Good to see you.
Good morning, Chief. Good
morning. No, I started singing here first when I was 15 years of age. That's going back to, what, 1940. So I've been here, well, on and off then, some other churches. Then back here again in 1955 with Jean Byrne. She was the organist then, a friend of mine. So, and I was here for a while, standing up on his son, and Jean Byrne turned around to his son. He says, would you ever stand out in front of that bunch that they were seeking to count four for them, you know? Which is what about as much as I could do. So that's why I'm here since every other Sunday. Never let up, except when I think I was on holidays once. And if I ever went away for the weekend, I'd be looking at my watch and saying, I wonder what are they doing now? So that's the size of it. So I'm here since.
Well, here in the restored Augustinian, we have doubled the size of the choir gallery, reflecting the centrality of music in the liturgical life of the Augustinian church here in Galway. It is renowned far and wide, outside the city even, for its choir, which is, the director is Sonny and the organist is Pat Lillis. It is very integral to the whole worship in the Augustinian. I suppose it's appropriate that we should be following the convictions of St. Augustine, who himself put it very succinctly when he said that he who sings prays twice. And that's the whole ethos of the Augustinian here over the last 60, 70 years. In fact, Sonny has been with us now probably almost 70 years. And crowds who come to this church come primarily to worship with the choir and to be led by the choir in that worship.
Is to interpret the words and get as much out of the words you possibly can by making sense out of them, phrasing, and putting your whole heart into it as if nothing else mattered. So you give it your whole, your mind and your heart and your soul, you know. Now what you have to do with that is be sure and breathe before you start. And then, if possible, to measure it out. Not to belt it out unless you have to. I think I was telling you that before, that it's like, what I always think about is, if you're jumping into water to swim, the first thing you do is, and then you go and you hold that breath, you see, until you have to come up. And then you kind of come up out of the water, and you're like, you see. But that's what it's nearly about, is to think every time of getting enough of breathing power there to let you continue the phrase as far as you can. First kind of big solo, I think, in my terms, in the Pro Cathedral when I was 14, I think it was. And never forget it, because the old parish church in those days, we used to call it the parish church, the balconies on both sides were packed, you know. So I had to stand up and sing this pass, and boy, was I shivering. My brother had, he caught, my two knees were going, so they were knocking against one another. So what I could do was clamp the two of them together. And he was beating out the time at the back of my leg, you know, back in my, just in the back here, you know. I never forget that. In those days, you know, when big masses were coming up, you used to have a practice every evening at 6:30, go down and sing the benediction at 7:30. and back then with the senior choir at 8 o'clock. That was rough going at the time. But you got in on it, you know, and there was a fear of getting flaked in school about it, obviously. So you went along with it. No, that was it. But you get in on it then. It isn't everyone that'll follow up on it, you know. But in later life, the fellowship would say that, you know, wouldn't be bothered. They go back to it and say, oh, do you remember this? Do you remember that? That's, you know, it follows them through. It's a great it's a great yardstick for human life, or what it can do for you. It'll make you, you know, think better, I think, or feel better, and see that there's a bit more in life than we think, you know. I think.
We've been here, the monastery has been here since 1642, the Portclare Monastery here in Galway, and it has always been very much part of the heritage of the city, not only as historically, but also as a kind of a sign to people of, you know, of prayer, and a reminder that prayer is important in our lives. And that being so, that we're kind of identified as a place of prayer. So many people would come for prayers and asking. We have one extern sister, Sister Joseph, and many people would come to her asking for prayers, and she would relay the messages on to us. So we take all of those intentions into our prayer in the choir. Incidentally, the choir is the chapel. We call it the choir. It's where we pray the divine office. So we take all of those intentions into our prayer and our singing, of course.
You see, say when I was small in the 1940s, there was no singing at Mass, except on a Sunday Mass. The Mass would be sung in Latin, and there might be a Latin motet sung by a choir during the offertory. The offertory was very long at that time. But apart from that, you'd very, very seldom have English hymns at Mass, maybe during the children's First Communion Mass. And the others then, you had all kinds of benedictions, holy hours, novenas, devotions of all kinds. That's where the hymns were. So one sister here said that the hymns started at a time when they had no priests.
We're going back to early years in Ireland. We'll say, after when the church was persecuted, when the penal laws, you couldn't have Mass. The priests started up confraternities, sodalities. In these places, you would get a lot of these older hymns. This is how the faith was kept alive for these people.
Where I came from, in Clamel, the Corpus Christi procession was a big thing. All the shops closed for the afternoon. The whole town turned out. Most people walked in the procession, and those who couldn't stood at the side. And we had an army band, we had a boys' club band, we had all the First Communicants, the Children of Mary. Everybody marched in the procession. We walked ahead with the Blessed Sacrament anyway, all the First Communicants in fours across the road, and we had long white dresses, and we had a basket of flower petals each, and we said this prayer, O Sacrament Most Holy, O Sacrament Divine, and then all praise and all thanksgiving. You kissed the petal at that stage, and you turned around and threw it on the ground in front of the Blessed Sacrament. And we kept up this the whole time until the end of the procession, when we had benediction.
Body of Christ be.
You know, they'd have their windows of their houses, you know, done up with altars, and even some people would have their doors open and, you know, an altar set up at the door, and they'd be standing there and they'd have candles lit and statues out and, you know, holy pictures up. And, you know, it was lovely to feel that, you know, that Jesus was going around, you know, in the Eucharist, and he was blessing our neighbourhood and keeping it safe for us. But it was, again, it was the old songs that were sung right through. We didn't have any hymn books, but we knew, "Nearer, my God, to thee, O sacrament most holy, sweet sacrament divine." We knew all these off by heart, and I just wonder nowadays, would it be the same with young people? Would they? I don't think they probably would know them off by heart, you know.
May his passion be.
We had an ecumenical service last week, and the theme of it was memory, and there was, the whole service was beautiful, and the preaching was beautiful, but just I was just thinking of the effect that music had. And after the homily, a hymn was played, and I found myself in tears with it, because it just, everything that had been said leading up to that was encapsulated in the song. And even though I wasn't taking in the full words of the song, it just worked on my soul. And I think that's the essence of the importance of music, especially in a prayer atmosphere, that somehow, like poetry, it can penetrate your soul in a very, very deep way. And everything that had been said before was powerful, but somehow the music just brought it together, and It has a special grace that way.
With thy saints for
I was playing handball in the street with a friend of mine called Bobby O'Connor, and my mother called me. I didn't like it because I was winning the game. And asked me to go to benediction for a special intention, without telling me what the intention was. And reluctantly I went along, and Bobby came with me. Now, Bobby wasn't the type of guy who went to benediction services much. I went to a few because my mother used to take me along. But when we arrived down, he was totally puzzled. Very few young people there. It was mainly older people, you know. And I remember we were sitting in the church while the service was going on, and he hadn't a clue what was going on. So he was asking me what the monstrance was, and, you know, what the incense, about the incense. And I remember there was an old man in front of us, and he turned around with a withering look and kind of put us in our place, you know, or put Bobby in his place. No, I actually loved the service. I loved going to the church because for me it was like, I've always been religious as far back as I can remember, but I've always been fascinated by the actual structure of chapels, and especially the music in them. And I'll never forget this day, because I think the first hymn, I'm not sure if it was Hail Queen of Heaven, but I always associated that with my father, who was an agnostic when I was young, but he was a sailor and he was always off at sea. And I suppose I was drawn into the hymn by the fact that he was off in the hazardous ocean, kind of. Hail Queen of Heaven, the ocean star, guide of the wanderer here below, thrown on life's surge, we claim thy care, save us from peril and from woe. Mother of Christ, star of the sea, pray for the wanderer, pray for me. But on this particular occasion, towards the end of the service, I heard a hymn that I'd never heard before, and it kind of sent shivers down my back. It was so sweet. And maybe it was because there was a lot of old people around as well, and they were all kind of singing along with cracked voices, you know. But before any other kind of music that I've liked in my life, and I got into popular music after that, as young people do, but this had more of an effect on me, I'd say, than anything else. You know, you forget about it later on, and then it comes back to you later in life. But that stayed with me, and years later, when I was writing an album called Just Another Town, I had the whole album complete, but there was one thing missing, and I had one sweet melody that was going on in my head, and I sang it to the two of my kids one day, and they were, my daughter, who was very musical, she said, "Oh my God," she said, "that's a beautiful melody." And I said, "Well, I was trying to write a song about a benediction service, but I couldn't get it." And she said, "Oh, try again," or something like that. And I did. I went back to it and actually wrote a song about the benediction service myself, and tried to capture in the melody and the words, you know, the whole feeling that I had at that occasion. And once I got that song then, the benediction, it made the album complete.
To sing in a church, singing is praising the Lord. That's the most vital part and thing of the Holy Show. Singing is praising. Now, I might be bad in my vices someday, understand. But like that, I did learn a lot of the hymns going to the National School. And then my missus sang in the choir in the old parish, the Pro Cathedral. And needless to say, I was singing her. And it was a great thing too to get out for half seven, or the rosary at night. So I had them all off, but I'm coming up here now, I'd say 25 years, my missus is coming up for over 50. So, like, I used to sing as much, like, you know, when I see, but as I say, singing is praising, and they're just coming natural to me now, like, you know, but the hymns, that's where I had sickness there about 4 years ago, I had cancer, you know, and I'm one of the lucky ones, and it is part of thanking God as well. You know, I meet a lot of people out town. I was missing for the last 5 weeks. I was in America because my son's brought me over for our 50th anniversary, and we missed here, do you know what I'm saying? And I've met people in the town that come back way with up with me, she's singing, and they won't join in, do you know what I'm saying? Now I do pretend I'm in boisterous and all to that. Do you understand? So that's the scene. Paddy Curran is my name.
My first reconnection with a hymn came when a family member asked me to sing at a funeral, very close family, and I desperately wanted to do anything to help them because they were grief-stricken. And they asked me, would I sing Nearer My God to Thee? And of course, me being the good atheist that I was, had forgotten all of that and went rushing back to find out the words and the music again. So anyway, with some traditional musicians, we went to the little church. And a sad occasion, I sang the song at the end of the Mass. And as I sang it, the children of the mother cried and wailed almost at the front of the church. And afterwards, I realised that, thinking about the words, that the song had a very definite kind of feel to it. The words and the meaning of the song.
Nearer, my God, to Thee, nearer to Thee, e'en though it be a cross that raiseth me, still all my song shall be nearer, my God, to Thee, nearer, my God, to Thee, nearer to Thee, though like the
and subsequently I have been asked to sing it at two funerals in the last 3 months, and I have found it to be even a greater spiritual experience for me than I could ever have imagined. And I now am very clear that watching the reaction and sensing the reaction of, you know, the people in the church, the families, that there is something about "Nearer, My God, to Thee," when the coffin is leaving the church, in terms of the whole spiritual dimension. I do honestly believe that there's some comforting notion in that song, that the spirit of the person that has died is moving away to God, to heaven, to another place, and that it is a kind of a comforting song, moving forward into the arms of something somewhere else, and that it's also comforting for the family and the people that are grieving.
Sweet shall my weeping be, grief surely leading me nearer, my God, to Thee, nearer to Thee.
Yeah, here in the Collegiate Church of St. Nicholas in the heart of Galway, we meet regularly on Sundays for our main Eucharistic service. In this service, the hymn singing is a very central part and a greatly loved part of our worship. In order to understand a considerable amount of the Protestant tradition, you need to have a grasp of why the hymns are so essential. It probably goes back to the Reformation itself, when the Word, i.e. the Bible and the explanation of the Bible, became central to the worship. And not it's a little simple, but if you could imagine a little bit that the Eucharist, the Holy Communion, tended to come into a sort of a once-a-month slot, whereas every Sunday it was to listen to the Word and then gradually to sing to the Word. So the hymns, they really expanded upon the Bible stories or the Bible teachings. And because singing is so indeed elemental and so a part almost of the whole makeup of the human being, you can understand why they became such an affection for the Church of Ireland people. In other words, just if you wanted to say in the takeoff of, say, Father Ted, that you can't have a liturgy without the Mass, so the Church of Ireland, or rather the Protestants, could say you can't have a liturgy without singing a hymn. Doesn't seem to feel quite right. And it's that tradition, indeed, which is continued today. As a rector, it's an impossible situation to choose the hymns, really, because people have their profound favourites, the ones that they have grown up on and they have loved. And I love this one, "Glorious things of Thee are spoken, Zion, city of our God." And it's written by John Newton, and it's based on the Psalms. And John Newton was a slave owner who used to be transporting slaves across the Atlantic. And then you probably know him from the words of Amazing Grace. And then he had a conversion experience and changed his whole way of looking at life. And out of that, he became a great writer of hymns, as if to express this sense of the grace of God and the sense of having had a vision and a light to a new way of living. Jesus, Saviour, since of Zion City, I through grace a member am. Let the world deride or pity, I will glory in thy name. And then fading is the worldling's pleasure, all his boasted pomp and show, solid joys and lasting treasures, none but Zion children know. And I think this is absolutely marvellous sort of stuff. And it's put to the tune of Austria by Haydn. And that gives it that terrific sense of great, dignified and stirring music at the same time. And that collision of those words and the music and those sentiments, I think, are just fantastic. I still think it has something to say today. And when we sing about God's grace and change and new ways and new beginnings and conversions and sing it in that particular form to Haydn, then I think we do have something where a sermon is really quite unnecessary.
Him singing is everything to do with my spiritual life. I mean, mine, I always would say, would be a mission of praising and praising. That the most powerful moments of prayer for me are when I'm either listening or singing. All my prayer experience has been oral through the ear. At just 135 days after impregnation, hearing is nearly fully developed. And those three little bones in the ear, the incus, the malleus and stabes, are completely developed by the time we're born. So it's the very first sense, really, that we're born really very, very inadequate and very unformed human beings. But indeed, our hearing is way ahead, you know, and that it's, we're all an ear, actually, our body's an ear, really. Look at it on a broader level too, in that when you're dealing with hymns of any sort, not to talk of the very popular ones, like, and for me, I think the most powerful ones would have been, from certainly from my childhood, would have been the ones to Patrick. I mean, I'm back there in school, there as a little 15-year-old on St. Patrick's Day, dying to get home. I went to a boarding school and we used to always get home on that day, or get to Dublin or wherever. Or Hail, glorious St. Patrick. And if you've ever been to Loch Derg, my God, to see the power of that still in people's psyche that haven't been up all night and so on, that you can still manage to get the all courage there for that. But I suppose you're probably dealing too with something which is all sound too. And it's the power of sound too, and how a sound can bring you back to a memory, to a space in yourself, which is above and beyond the here and now, the H-E-A-R and now, and taking you back to the aural, which of course has certainly been neglected in theology, That we're very visually educated when it comes to praying. But really when it comes to the ear, we haven't actually explored that. And that's really what your program is about, is exploring the power of sound to bring you into the presence of the divine. And that's certainly these hymns have, as indeed does plain chant. Plain chant per se is just, I think, probably the highest form of that that power of sound, because, of course, plain chant, like the traditional religious songs too, are unaccompanied. Plain chant, of course, would have been very much part of the monastic tradition. And so even still here, particularly we'll say in Glenstall, you have it sung, what, five times a day, four, definitely very strongly. But I think it was a big, big mistake of Vatican II, of course, that it really threw out the chant by, of course, going back to the vernacular. It meant that the chant, like the Latin Mass, was buried under the whole dogma of Vatican II, which I think was a real tragedy. But now it's keep coming back. I think it's going to be part of that phoenix rising out of the ashes, which is happening in the church now. It's an integral part, actually, because I find myself now teaching it all over the world, that you go into a group of people, as I did, what I'm just doing that about 2 years now. I remember the first time going into a group of 25 people, retreat centre in Canada, Hollyhock, and starting, Kyrie, and you could see people bristling. I say, now what's the story here? And say, we don't want any of that now. That's all church stuff. We have terrible bad memories of that. I say, give me 3 days. Give me 3 days, you know. And got a letter just there recently, actually, from one of these people who attended. And she said, one of these days, she said, I'm going to be taken in Victoria. Canada, she lives in Victoria, for going up and down the street singing Kyrie Eleisons and Alleluias since the workshop. And this woman was a total atheist, actually, when she came in. But again, it's because it's got nothing to do with Roman Catholic or whatever. It's the sound. It's like that wonderful Zen saying that says, to understand God is to listen. Listen to Jesus, Muhammad and Buddha, but don't get caught up in the names. Listen beyond the names. Listen to the breath of God. And in those hymns and in plain chant, you are listening to the breath of God. It's the pure breath of God. The feather on the breath of God, as Hildegard would call herself.
Truly I say to you, this day
is a way of proclaiming a better world, of refusing to give in to the grimness of the past. Nil desperandum. Singing breaks out in the prison yard, on the chain gang, from the black hole, the oubliette. Out of the depths we cry to you, O Lord. One particularly monstrous black hole has been humming B-flat for billions of years, astronomers tell us. A sound has gone forth through all the earth. We join it with our voices. Singing initiates a welcoming swell towards creation's new direction, a ripple from the edge. Such a possibility opens for us from every situation of whatever kind. As a ship with sails gives itself to the wind and to the current of the waves, we give ourselves to the sound and to the singing.
Blessed are those who bring peace. They shall be called sons of God.
Blessed are those who suffer in the cause of right. The kingdom of heaven is theirs. Amen. Truly I say to you, this day you will be with me in paradise.
I always tell that story when I started off teaching as a young teacher. I was at a wonderful convent in Dungarvan in County Waterford. And Mercy Convent there. And I just come out at the age of 21 as a very enthusiastic teacher and fired by all sorts of singing experiences, from the classical to the Shannos. Beatles were popular at the time, rock, medieval stuff, Shannos, as I said, Gregorian chant, plain chant. And so I said to the principal, she was a wonderful woman, listen, can I just listen to all the 300 girls, and I spent days doing it, sing a little Three Blind Mice or whatever. And then I picked out 29 who were exceptionally talented, and we had a lovely year together because we were much the same. They were like my little young sisters, and I was like there, they'd be admiring my clothes and I'd come in and so on. And they were very good. We did work in RTE and we used to do masses and all that. And then I was leaving after that. And so I ran a little survey then with 29 of them. And I said, listen, what did she like most over the year? And they, believe it or not, they said, what we loved was plain chant. And I said, well, come on, this is weird. Like, this is all church stuff. And it's hard enough to get you into the chapel to say your prayers. And they said, no, we felt better after it. So I think it's music is going to be terribly important. These hymns are going to be terribly important in our way forward. I think we've got to listen very carefully to what we sing, what we expose our young people to, if we want them to come back to the church.
Boy singers. Mark Keane is the director of our choir and he's playing the organ. We like to sing hymns because we're singing about God and how much we love God and how much thankfully that we are that he made us and that. So just thanks for having us on the radio. Well, I like singing hymns because I like the energy from the organ. It's like there's a load of energy going through you when you hear the organ. It's class. And they're nice songs, like, they're not useless music.
When I first found out that we were singing Latin in it, I thought that was great because I was reading a few books and it was Latin in them, and I thought it was a really great language because my mum used to learn it, and I always wanted to know what it was like, and it's great being able to sing it. Because I never thought there'd be anything that sings that sort of stuff anymore, but there is.
And the best thing about a place like this in this big church is the voice echoes around the place, so it sounds a lot louder from not just one place, but like it echoes all around the place. So if you were sitting all the way down the back, like, you'd hear it, whereas if you're only in a little area, you wouldn't.
It's always got class designs in the windows and things. Cool.
Well, if you're singing well, you know, if you can get your choir in good form, you know, and get them to work on and try and interpret that piece as best they can, the congregation will react to that in their own way. You'll get the vibes will come up to you, see, from downstairs. And you know then, you know, that you're getting to them, you know, that's the name of the game. But you get them to move with you, kind of say, sometimes you shout to them, come on, will you, come on. I'm a devil for that, you know. But the where I'm in the church, otherwise. Again, it's the heart again, you know, get into it with a bit of love at all stages, you know. Not too much screeching if you can avoid it. Sometimes it's hard to avoid that. But you will, you'll get it back from the congregation, right, you know.